Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers, and the co-chair of the Endowment for the Business of Government. We created the Endowment in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. Find out more about the Endowment by visiting us on the web at endowment.pwcglobal.com. The Business of Government Hour features a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. Our conversation today is with Dr. Marilyn Gaston, Director, Bureau of Primary Health Care, Health Resources and Services Administration at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Good morning, Dr. Gaston.
Good morning.
And joining us in our conversation is another PwC partner, Fred Fagerson. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning, Paul.
Well, Dr. Gaston, that sure was a mouthful when I introduced you.
Yes,
perhaps
it was.
You could tell our listeners about your mission, the organization's mission, its activities.
Well, first of all, let me just say that our agency, Health Resources and Services Administration, or HRSA for short, is the focal point in the Department of Health and Human Services for actually getting health care to underserved communities, meaning that we build health centers, we place health care providers, so that it makes us very different from NIH, which everyone knows is the research agency. CDC is the epidemiologic agency. FDA is a regulatory agency. And ours is really getting health care to people throughout the nation that don't have it. Our listening audience might be surprised to know that there are millions of people in our country that really face multiple barriers to getting health care. I think we're all kind of aware of the barrier of being uninsured, what that places on us. And that's an important one, the financial aspects. But there are barriers that even if they had a health care card, that they would have difficulty surmounting. For instance, there are areas where people are so isolated in this country, they drive for hundreds of miles to try to get to some health care. There are cultural barriers, there are language barriers, there are attitudinal barriers. We could go on and on. Our system itself even presents barriers to people. So that what we are trying to do is help communities and people that are underserved, uninsured, disadvantaged, especially poor. We target poor people throughout the nation our mission is to increase access to quality health care for them and also to improve their health outcomes. And that's what we do every day. And the agency, what I do is direct the bureau that gets primary health care. That's the family doctor. That's the first contact that we all know about, as opposed to the tertiary care part of the system, which is the hospital. Okay, we're the primary care. And this is where most people get their care, in a primary care. And that's where prevention goes on, early diagnosis, early treatment. And if that system is strong, then we as a nation will save money. We don't want people to go to the ER for in the emergency room for everything. That's very costly. And we certainly want to keep people out of the hospital. If they go to the hospital, we want to decrease their hospital stay. Not only will that improve their health, but also save money. And so that's what primary care aims to do. In the agency, we also have a bureau that looks specifically at maternal and child health. We have a bureau that looks specifically at HIV/AIDS, and we have a bureau that looks specifically at training and placement of health care providers across the nation. So that's HRSA, and that's our focus.
How big is the bureau, and what type people work on your team?
We have upwards of 400 people at this point. Most of them are trained in healthcare. Well, we have a number of administrators, you know, budget people and administrators. But we have physicians in the bureau. We have nurses. We have people that are trained in public health. So we have a number of people that have masters in public health. And these degrees that are given at Hopkins and at various universities, and they come directly into the system from there. But most of them are really well-trained and interested in health care, per se.
You started to touch on your role at the Bureau. Could you expand upon your role at the Bureau, please?
Yes. My role as director, I guess as any director, is to not only oversee and ensure the work and look at the progress, that's what's going on, but to provide leadership in terms of vision, to provide leadership in terms of helping everyone in the Bureau. They really are the ones that are doing the work. I'm there to serve them. The people in the Bureau are the heart and soul of the work that we do. And so I'm there in a partnership role. As a leader, I believe in participatory management. Another leader might look at it another way, but that's what I see my role as being. I have a management role, of course, in terms of budget and people and projects, but I also have a role that looks at, well, where are we going to be 10 years from now? Where are we headed? Where have we gone? What do we need to change? So in terms of providing some direction along with the senior leadership, that's the role that I play.
Wonderful. Maybe you can spend a little time talking about your career and tell us a little bit about that.
Let me see. Where to start? How much time do we have? Let me see if I can make it real short. I think that I really realized very early as a little girl that I wanted to be a physician. I think at the time I even knew that I wanted to work with poor and underserved people because I grew up poor. I grew up in the projects, and we didn't have any health insurance either. And one day my mother fainted in our living room. And I, of course, it scared me half to death. I didn't know really what to do. And we didn't have 911 back then in 1900. So, well, you know, the listening audience needs to know there are many places in the country that still don't have 911. You know, we live in such a highly technical, especially in these urban areas, we forget that many of our rural and frontier areas still don't have 911. But anyway, so now everybody will really appreciate that, hopefully, as something that we have. She fainted because she had cancer of the cervix and had bled from a normal hemoglobin of around 13 or 14 down to 2. Now, that was a good example of how people that are poor, people that are uninsured even today, put off getting care until they're really, really very sick. And that was a major issue. I now see, though, that another part of that was that she really was so busy taking care of us that she wasn't taking care of herself. And that knowledge and reality has prompted me in the last few years to write a book targeting women to really help them take care of themselves and their health a lot better. That prompted me to know that I wanted to be a physician. So I went through medical school. I didn't get a lot of encouragement back there because I'm African American, I'm a woman, I was poor. Someone even had the nerve to tell me I couldn't do it because I was Catholic. So, but anyway, I made it through. And I knew throughout my training that I was going to work in poor communities. I worked in Haiti while I was in training. I went to Appalachia and spent time. So I really learned the issues in many different communities about the trouble with access to care. I became a pediatrician and got interested in sickle cell disease because I was seeing a lot of African-American babies with sickle cell disease, and started a sickle cell center at the University of Cincinnati where I went to school. The reason that's important is because it also gave me an opportunity to see how to get health care to very special populations. For instance, homeless populations, migrant farm workers, sickle cell communities, those kinds of particularly isolating, either because of illness or because of occupation or because of lifestyle with AIDS, et cetera, are very specific groups that we have to target too, with unique access approaches to help get them into care. And then I wound up, I started a community health center in a very underserved community right outside of Cincinnati where I grew up. So when I had the opportunity to head this bureau, it was just the dream job of my life because in the bureau, what we do is build, as I said, community health centers. We build health centers and put them out in very underserved areas. We now have over 3,000 health centers across the nation and in the territories, serving upwards of 12 million people. These health centers are owned and they're very unique because they're not federal health centers, even though we administer them and we help to fund them. But we're in partnership with these communities, and they're owned by the community. We now know that the way to solve our health care problems in this nation, one of the ways, is that people need to take charge. When they take charge of their own health and decide to make a change in their access issues in their communities, make a change in their health problems in their communities, they're going to decrease their infant mortality rate and really focus on that and take charge. They can do it. And so that's what we're there to do, is to partner with them. And so now to come back as the director of the Bureau of Primary Health Care and do it. So I've come from isolated communities in terms of providing care and increasing access and dealing with health outcomes, to now on a national basis to do that. And it's been one of the most rewarding things of my life.
This is a good stopping point. It's time for a break. Come back with us after the break as we continue our discussion with Dr. Marilyn Gaston of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. This is the Business of Government Hour.